I wonder if you were in the place of Joseph at this point in his life, and you looked back over the previous 13 years, I wonder how you would have assessed those years. When we first met Joseph in chapter 37 of Genesis, he was 17 years old. Verse 2 tells us that. And at this juncture, he was 30 years old. We read that in this passage. So 13 years have passed since Joseph was in his father's house in the land of Canaan. And during those 13 years, there have been many, many trials, many difficulties, many problems in the life of Joseph. We've actually been looking at all those events over those 13 years. We saw that his brothers hated him because his father favored him. We saw that his brothers plotted to kill him. We saw that his brothers sold him as a slave to the Ishmaelites. We saw that the Ishmaelites took him to Egypt and sold him as a slave to Potiphar. And we saw that God was gracious to him, and Potiphar was kind to him and set him above his house. But then Potiphar's wife brought a false charge of attempted rape, and Joseph then found himself in prison. And we saw that there he did a favor to the baker and the cupbearer, especially the cupbearer, because he interpreted his dream for him and said to him, although Pharaoh was angry with you and has put you in prison, you will go back into Pharaoh's service. And the cupbearer did go back to Pharaoh's service, but he forgot Joseph. Joseph had pleaded with him, when you get back to Pharaoh's service, please remember me. I've been put here unjustly. I should never have been in this land. My brothers who hated me sold me. I shouldn't be in this prison. A woman brought a false charge against me. It's all unjust. Please remember me. But the cupbearer forgets. That has been the last 13 years of Joseph's life. And as I say, if you or I were at that juncture in Joseph's life and we looked back over the previous 13 years, I wonder how we would have summarized those years. I wonder if you would have said, well, there have been one or two good moments, but frankly, there have been a washout. There have been one or two areas where things seem to have gone well, but frankly, there have been years of trials, difficulties, problems, and turmoil. However, Joseph was a very godly man. And I think he would have looked back over those 13 years, and I think he would have said, God has been gracious to me. That is what this passage reveals. This passage tells us that those 13 years, God has been gracious to Joseph. Because the Joseph we meet here at the age of 30 is a very different Joseph to the one we met in chapter 37 at the age of 17. There has been an enormous change in him. And God has been gracious to him. And God has been with him through all those trials, those terrible times. And they have been terrible times. Never underestimate the trials that Joseph faced. Can you imagine, as a 17-year-old, your brothers hate you so much, they sell you as a slave? I mean, slavery in those days was a terrible thing. And as a 17-year-old, he's in this home where his father loves him. He's his father's favorite son. His brothers take him and sell him as a slave, and off he goes to Egypt. Can you imagine going to Egypt as a 17-year-old slave? Loneliness and turmoil and bitterness and all the trials that come with it. So he had all these trials, all these difficulties. But then as we look over those 13 years, we see that actually God has been very gracious to him. And it is something we need to do. We need to learn this discipline as you look back at your life and you look back over periods where there have been enormous trials, enormous difficulties, enormous problems, anguish, turmoil. Remember, God is with you and God is being gracious to you. You may not see it as you go through the trials, but as you look back, you will see it, because God is always with his people and God is always gracious to his people. God is always gracious. It is the very nature of God. When the Apostle John writes about God and he wants to describe the essence of God's character, and the Apostle John, in one statement, just a few words, three words, identifies the very essence of God's character. God is love. God is love. Because that is the heart of God. That is the character of God. When we meet God, we immediately say to ourselves, he is love. Because love pours out from his heart. Love is found in all his actions, the way that he deals with all his children throughout all their lives, in every event of their lives. There is love. Now, we may not see it, but it is there. Last week we were looking at how in the providences of life we see the grace of God. Well, as I say, this chapter reveals that over those 13 years, God has been gracious to Joseph. Let me show you four things in this passage that reveal the grace of God in the life of Joseph. Four things in this passage, the grace of God in the life of Joseph. And the first is this: when you look at this passage, it becomes obvious that God taught Joseph humility. God taught Joseph humility. When you go back to chapter 37 and you meet this 17-year-old teenager. Now, I don't know how you feel when you read chapter 37, but I read 37 and I immediately say to myself, do you know, he's like just about every other 17-year-old I've met. Because he was arrogant. You remember the time when he had this dream that there was his wheat sheaf and there were the sheaves of his brothers, and his brothers' sheaves bowed down to his sheaf. And he knew the meaning of it, and he couldn't keep it to himself. He had to go and tell his brothers, and it seems that the way he told them is, well, you know, there was this dream and I had a sheaf and you all had a sheaf and your sheaves bowed down to my sheaf. I wonder what that dream means. There is that touch of pride and arrogance. And he has this other dream that there were stars and the sun and the moon, and they were all bowing down to him, because he was showing that his brothers and his father and his mother, they would bow down to him. In other words, he would be ruler one day. And again, he spoke about it. There was that arrogance, there was that pride in Joseph. We fast forward 13 years and we find Joseph in prison. And Pharaoh has a dream, and cupbearer speaks to Pharaoh and says to him, there is a Hebrew slave who interprets dreams. And Pharaoh says, bring him here. And Pharaoh speaks to Joseph and he says, I've had a dream and there is no one who can interpret it. I have heard it said of you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it. Now, if this had been Joseph at the age of 17, Joseph would have said, oh, it's me, you know. I'm wonderful. I've got real power. I've got real ability. I'm very clever, you know. I actually met a 17-year-old just the other day and they were telling me how clever they were. It was all intended well. But Joseph, you see, doesn't do that. In verse 16, Joseph answered Pharaoh, it is not in me. It is not in me. Because those 13 years have taught him that he is a human being with all the weaknesses, all the limitations, all the frailties of a human being. And it is God who has all power, and it is God who uses human beings. Once read a book on the life of Moses by Campbell Morgan, Dr. Campbell Morgan. And Campbell Morgan summarized the life of Moses, because the life of Moses is in three 40-year sections. The first 40 years, Moses was in the palace as the grandson of Pharaoh. The next 40 years, he was in the wilderness tending sheep. And then the last 40 years, he led Israel out of Egypt to the promised land. And Campbell Morgan summarized Moses' life like this. Moses spent the first 40 years believing he was a somebody. He then spent the next 40 years learning he was a nobody. And then he spent the last 40 years learning that God uses a nobody. And that was Joseph as well. Joseph spent the first 17 years of his life believing he was a somebody, because his father loves him. And his father has given him this coat of many colors. And his father shows how much he loves him more than all his other sons. And he's had these dreams. And the dreams tell him that he has a great future, that one day his brothers will bow down before him and he will rule over them. And his father and mother, he will rule over them. So he's had these dreams, he's had all this love from his father, and he believes he's a somebody. And can I say this to you? It is a lesson that is found everywhere in the scriptures. God does not use those who believe themselves to be a somebody. You know, it says three times in the Bible, God resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble. God resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble. And that parable that Jesus spoke of the Pharisee and the tax collector, Luke's Gospel chapter 18, and how the Pharisee boasted about his works, and the tax collector says, Lord, have mercy upon me. And Jesus finishes that parable with those words, all who consider themselves to be great, all who are proud and arrogant will be rejected, but all who are humble will be accepted. God uses the humble. You want to be a servant of God. You want to be a weapon in God's hand. You want to be material in God's hand, that he uses you for a great ministry. Seek humility. The first thing that God does with his great servants is to teach them humility. The Apostle Paul, when he was still a Jew, would say, well, as to righteousness that comes from the law, I'm faultless. Can you imagine saying such things? Can you imagine somebody saying, as to the righteousness that comes from the law, I'm faultless? In other words, I obey the law of God without fault, without any defect. That's what he believed himself to be. Well, he was no good in the hands of God. But then God taught him humility. And he says, whatever things I considered to be my profit, I counted them as rubbish. Indeed, I count all things as rubbish for the sake of knowing Christ. Moses learned humility. Paul learned humility. Joseph learned humility. If he had still been proud and arrogant as he was as a 17-year-old, he would not have been a vital weapon in the hand of God, because God will not share his glory with anyone. When God uses a person, all the glory must go to him and none to the person whom he has used. That is a rule of Scripture. All glory goes alone to God. And so over those 13 years, in Potiphar's house, in prison, God teaches Joseph humility. Pray that God would give us all humility, that we may be used of him in great ministries as Joseph, Moses, and Paul were. So God taught Joseph humility. Secondly, we see in this passage that God taught Joseph wisdom. God taught Joseph wisdom. When you go back to chapter 37, and Joseph is a 17-year-old, Now, we can forgive him this. 17-year-olds tend not to be wise. They haven't had the experience of life. But it's clear he just didn't have wisdom. He has these dreams and he immediately blurts them out. He has the first dream and he goes to his brothers and he blurts them out. He has this coat that God has given him. And you can picture this man strutting around showing his brothers that he's the father's favorite child. He has this second dream and he blurts it out. There is no wisdom there. When you read 37, you're almost saying to yourself, Joseph, be wise. Don't say these things. Your brothers already hate you because you've got this coat of many colors. Your father loves you and your brothers have already got it in for you. Don't arouse them any further. Don't say these things. But he doesn't have that wisdom, you see. But then you meet him as a 30-year-old. And Pharaoh tells him his dreams. And Joseph interprets Pharaoh's dreams. But he doesn't stop there. He doesn't just say, well, here's the interpretation of the dream. There'll be 7 years of plenty, and then there'll be 7 years of famine, and that's the interpretation of the dream. He doesn't stop there. He's not being arrogant. He's not being proud here. He's simply being a wise man. He goes on to give advice to Pharaoh. We read from verse 33. He says to Pharaoh, now therefore let Pharaoh select a discerning and wise man and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh proceed to appoint overseers over the land and take 1/5 of the produce of the land of Egypt during the 7 plentiful years, and let them gather all the food of these good years that are coming and store up grain under the authority of Pharaoh for food in the cities, and let them keep it. So he's already outlined this plan. This is God-given wisdom. This is not something he could have prepared for. He had absolutely no idea what Pharaoh's dream was. He didn't know why Pharaoh had called him out of prison. He's there in prison, and suddenly this man comes and says, Pharaoh wants to see you. And he goes to Pharaoh. Absolutely no idea what's coming. And Pharaoh comes up with his dream. And Joseph interprets it. But you see, there is this God-given wisdom. He's able to give advice to Pharaoh and say, I would suggest you do this. I would suggest you take a wise and a discerning man. Now, there's no hint here. He's not saying, by the way, that's me. I don't think he expected to be appointed. He was a Hebrew slave. You know, you don't expect, if you're a Hebrew slave in Egypt, a 30-year-old who's just been in prison, you don't expect to be appointed prime minister. I don't think he expected any of that. But he was simply giving Pharaoh advice and saying, my suggestion to you is appoint a discerning and a wise man over the whole land, and then over each of the areas, appoint a local person, overseers, and while those 7 years are there, store up food and store them up in each city so that each city has a local supply. You don't want a city to be starving and food is available elsewhere and has to be transported. Make sure that the food is available in each city so that people are not starving. I suggest this is what you do. He's got wisdom now. And you know, friends, these are some of the great benefits of going through trials and difficulties. God gives us humility and God gives us wisdom. You learn from your trials. You learn how our emotions are in times of trials. You learn the kind of thought processes that human beings have when they go through difficult times. You learn to depend upon God. You learn about prayer. You learn things in the scriptures. There's a psalm that you've read again and again, and it's been good. And then you're going through a particularly difficult time. And you turn to that psalm. I've never read this psalm before. You've read it many times. But it suddenly speaks because you see something of the character of God. And you see something of the wonder of God's love for his people. I don't know how many times I've read Psalm 23. And then there was a day I was reading Psalm 23. I was actually reading it to somebody else. And I read that phrase, Even though I go through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. And I had to stop. I couldn't continue. I was so overcome. Because I've never experienced this in the way that I have. There has been something of God and His presence through these trials. A very familiar psalm. But then you go through the valley of the shadow of death. And you go through all these bitter experiences. And you look back at those bitter experiences and say, God was with me. Joseph could do that because, as we've seen in previous chapters, God was with him. Three times it says when he was in prison, God was with him. So trials give us this knowledge, this wisdom. We learn how our emotions respond to trials. We learn to control our emotions. And you say to yourself, I went through those trials and this is what my emotions did. Well, I'll have to watch my emotions because there were some ungodly feelings there. There were some ungodly knee-jerk reactions there. I'll have to be careful about that. You've learned wisdom, you see. You go through certain thoughts. Certain thoughts enter your mind as you go through trials and you think, no, those thoughts were not right. And you learn how we as human beings face trials and go through trials. You learn so much about God and His care for His people and how God does care. And you think, God isn't just there dishing out answers as soon as we pray. But God guides His children and God watches over His children and equips His children. He takes you through the worst of trials. He doesn't take you away from them. But you begin to learn the presence of God. There is much wisdom to be learned in our trials. So God taught Joseph wisdom. Thirdly, in this passage, these 13 years, the grace of God, we learn in this passage that God strengthened Joseph's faith. God strengthened Joseph's faith. That shouldn't surprise us. Because the New Testament tells us, the Apostle Peter writes to Christians who are going through trials. And Peter says to these Christians who are going through trials, he says, rejoice because your faith, which is of greater worth than gold, though it is refined by fire, is being tested. And that word tested means that God is strengthening it. As you go through trials, these fiery trials, he says, your faith is being strengthened. And we know that to be the truth. Because we go to God more often in prayer and we see greater depths in His character. We learn to lean on Him, to trust Him, to depend upon Him. And Joseph's faith in God has been strengthened during these times. Pharaoh calls him into his office. And Pharaoh says to him that I've had these dreams. And Pharaoh reports the dreams to him. Before even Pharaoh reports the dreams, he simply says, I've had a dream and there is no one who can interpret it. And it says, Joseph answered Pharaoh, it is not in me. God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer. God will answer that. You see, he's got this trust in God. He knows God will answer it. And when Pharaoh reports his dreams, Joseph says to him, this will definitely happen. This is not one of those things that may happen, may not happen. It will definitely happen. You've had two dreams, and the two dreams tell you that God is underlining it. God is saying, this is a definite matter. I wonder if Joseph at this point remembered that he also had two dreams. You know, he had the dream of his brother's sheaves bowing down to his sheaf, and he had the dream of the stars and the sun and the moon bowing down to him. He had two dreams. And I wonder if he reflected on that and said, well, just as this is definite because there are two dreams, I also had two dreams and there will come a day when I will be ruler over my brothers and my father and my mother. I will be a ruler in some way. I wondered if he thought of that. But you see, he has faith in God. He's God's spokesman. And he says to Pharaoh, this will happen. You've got to take action. When the 7 years of plenty come, remember 7 years of famine are coming. They will come because the dreamer said it and God doesn't fail. They will come. Therefore, take action. He has faith in God. Isn't it interesting that all those trials that he went through didn't destroy his faith, didn't weaken his faith, but actually strengthened his faith? Isn't that interesting? He didn't walk away from God and say, never again. They actually had a strengthening effect on his faith. You go through trials in your life, you look back and you will see this, the grace of God. Your faith has been strengthened. Your trust in him has grown because you've seen him at work in your life through your trials. So God taught Joseph humility. God taught Joseph wisdom. God strengthened Joseph's faith. Fourthly and finally, God enabled Joseph to forget his trials. In other words, God enabled him to move on from his trials and not to keep looking back and to be held by them. You know how some people go through trials and they never seem able to move on, but those trials, that difficult period that they went through in their lives, seems to have enslaved them and they can't move on from there. And that's not right. Now, it happens. I'm not judging anybody. I've seen it happen. And you have to take pity on people for whom this happens, that a terrible incident has happened and they just cannot move on. And we need to pray for them and they need to pray that we must move on. Joseph moves on. Joseph doesn't allow those 13 years of injustice and hatred from his brothers and false charges of attempted rape. He doesn't allow any of those to hold him, and he isn't bitter and angry and always looking back saying, this happened, this happened, this happened. He's not like that. How do we know that? We know that by the names that he gives his children. You know, in Eastern culture, names have an enormous meaning. We don't just give names to our children. Our children's names have meaning. And it says that Joseph had two children, two sons. And it says in verse 51, Joseph called the name of his firstborn Manasseh. For, he said, God has made me forget all my hardship and all my father's house. God has made me forget all my hardship and all my father's house. He doesn't mean I've forgotten my brothers and my father. He means all that hatred and all that bitterness that my brothers had against me, I have overcome it. It is not going to hold me. It is not going to deter me. It is not going to stop me from progressing in my life. That it is there. I've learned from it, but I'm not going to allow it to determine my life. I'm going to move on. It's like the Apostle Paul writing to the Philippians, and he says, forgetting that which is behind, I press on for the prize. I press on to take hold of that for which Christ Jesus took hold of me. Paul had done terrible things in his life. And Paul could have spent his entire Christian life in self-pity. Oh, I persecuted the people of God. I imprisoned the people of God. I gave approval when they were stoning Stephen. He doesn't allow him those trials, those difficulties, those sins to hold him. He moves on. And Joseph doesn't allow his brother's hatred and all the injustice in the land of Egypt to hold him. He calls his son Manasseh. God has made me forget all my hardships and all my father's house, all the hatred that was there. He has a second son and he calls him Ephraim. For God has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction. This was a land where I faced affliction, trials and difficulties, but they're gone. I'm now fruitful. I can serve God in Pharaoh's cabinet, and I can be the means of saving lives. This is the grace of God, that God enabled him to move on from his trials and not to be held captive by them. So the grace of God in those 13 years of Joseph's trials, God taught Joseph humility. God taught Joseph wisdom. God strengthened Joseph's faith. And God enabled Joseph to forget the trials and to move on. Let's pray.